You're listening to Cinema Jaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on location at the original Mother's Nightclub in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is...
Rye the Movie Guy, and this week on Cinema Jaw, Matt, we talk about movies that deal about Cinema Jaw, that deal about movies, that deal about Cinema Jaw, as we get very, very...
Meta.
Meta.
And then we're going to make a movie about it.
This is totally your idea, Matt.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's the movies that are self-referential, break the fourth wall. It's a movie within a movie, that sort of thing, which, I mean, it happens a lot because obviously filmmakers love the topic of filmmaking.
I agree. And it's funny. I think these movies, these types of movies, have gotten much more popular lately.
Yeah, I think it's probably because of the mass media culture we're in. People are picking apart the genres and really getting very hip and savvy to the different tropes and stuff like that. So
sure. And Matt came up with this idea because we have a special guest going to be joining us in a couple of minutes. Parham Gill is an independent film director who directed a film called The Last Supper, or it just Last Supper, and it actually revolves around two people who got out of like a... You know, they're sort of like lunatics, and they escape. They find a video camera, and they actually start making a video and putting it out on YouTube.
Right, right, and they sort of become YouTube stars. I can't wait to talk to Parham about it, and it's got some interesting people in it.
It does, yeah. And he also co-wrote it, so I can't wait to hear where he got the idea for the film, because I think it sounds hilarious.
Maybe he escaped from an asylum, wrote the movie about people who escaped from an asylum, and made a movie.
That's very meta.
Yeah.
I love it. The film actually went on to win the San Francisco Global Movie Fest in San Jose, and it's going to be opening in Thanksgiving, so we'll be talking to him very shortly.
Cool.
In addition to that, Matt, we go eye for an eye on the new Denzel Washington movie, The Equalizer.
Okay.
We have a...
Denzel's got another film coming out?
He sure does. we have a theater review of This Is Where I Leave You, the new Jason Bateman, Tina Fey movie I got out and caught, plus our top five meta movies. In addition to that, because of the generic name, The Equalizer, how crappy is that, Matt?
Yeah, that's like naming your band Bad Attitude.
Yeah, you are going to be taking Parham on in generic movie title trivia.
I should be good at this.
Plus, there's actually a movie coming out entitled Tusk, and it is a Kevin Smith movie.
Yeah, yeah. Sweet.
Yeah, and people probably don't even know about it because I was going to bring this up on the jaw, how irrelevant Kevin Smith has become. I mean, he's totally fallen off the map.
Are you kidding me?
No, not at all. I'm shocked by this.
He's a keynote speaker at every Comic-Con from here to Toledo.
Oh, come on. What does that mean?
That means he's very relevant, man. No. He's got a lot of fans.
Cinema War. Boy, oh boy. Parham's going to have his hands full with that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, so as always...
Yeah, let's bring him in.
Yeah, huh? Well, as always, it's a packed jaw.
Yes, jam-packed even.
Jam-packed.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Without further ado, we bring in our guest. Parham Gill has directed the independent film Last Supper, which stars comedian Eddie Griffin and Josh Myers. Parham, welcome to Cinema Jaw.
Hi, thank you for having me.
We should mention that Parham's joining us via the telephone. You're out in Stockton, California, correct?
That's right.
Which we just learned is actually way north of Los Angeles. I didn't know that. My geography sucks.
You think everything when you hear California is Los Angeles.
Yeah, pretty well, or San Francisco, yeah.
I don't blame you for that.
So, as I was mentioning earlier, Parham, you actually co-wrote this movie. Where'd you guys come up with the idea?
Well, it's interesting. Many years ago, in fact, about 12 years ago, I was at Mumbai Film Festival where a friend of mine had seen this movie, a little movie from Slovenia. Again, if you couldn't find Stockton, California, I imagine finding Slovenia on the world map. It's a small little country with a very small film industry, and they'd come out with a movie called Last Supper, which had done exceptional business in that country. It was produced by Slovenia Film Fund. A friend of mine gave me the DVD, and I watched it, and I thought, wow. It was entirely a found footage film, shot very cheaply, but emotionally it moved me immensely, and we thought we should update it for America.
So
that's where the idea came from.
Is it so? This is kind of a remake of sorts.
Not entirely. The idea is from that movie, but we entirely updated it to the modern culture and the social media and how it impacts our judgment of world around us.
So actually, let's talk about the idea for a minute here. It's about a couple of loonies that escape from, or is it fair to say lunatics that escape from the asylum, and they're looking for a princess, they're looking for love.
Exactly, yeah. It's a very touching and moving idea that two guys from Looney Bin are enamored with the video camera that is used to record that they take their medication. And they get so enamored with it that they steal it and escape from the asylum, and they want to make a movie. And obviously now they want a lead actress, and they are filming people without their knowledge until obviously things start to happen where they're slapped or, you know, thrown out of places, until they come across a prostitute who's absolutely burnt out and doesn't care as to where it's heading. And the entire experience and how they start putting, you know, the prostitute starts to put the clips from whatever they shoot on YouTube, and how they become a YouTube phenomena.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it sounds absolutely hilarious. And as you say, what I find so interesting is that it's also touching at the same time. So it's not strictly a dark comedy. It also sort of hits a nerve.
Absolutely, it's a dramedy where you know, things are taking place at their own sort of insignificant pace, but suddenly it grabs you by the horns, and that's where it moves you and impacts you in a very emotional manner.
How long did it take to film this movie?
It was shot in 3 weeks.
All out in California?
Anaheim, California.
Gotcha. And you have a pretty impressive cast. You have Eddie Griffin, who was from Malcolm and Eddie and Undercover Brothers. A lot of people know him.
Deuce Bigelow.
Obviously. Yeah. And also you have Seth Meyers' brother, Josh Meyers, is in the film as a lead, too. Did they come in and read for the roles, or did you guys already sort of know these guys?
We didn't know them. I had a somewhat of an idea of who I wanted for these particular roles. The script was sent to Eddie via ICM Partners, which represent Eddie. And Eddie mentioned that he wrote the script in the middle of the night and woke up his agent that, dude, I want to do this movie.
That's awesome, man. Was it a fun experience directing, you know, a guy like Eddie Griffin, who's kind of known as, you know, he goes pretty hardcore into roles, gets wacky.
Oh, yeah. He's a very loud comedian, and the very first day on the sets, he was doing it in his own way, and I said, Eddie, this is not you. Think Edward Griffin. This is a different person. And we kept going back and forth until I told him, you're a child, you're innocent. And that's what grabbed his attention. He says, oh, I'm innocent. I'm a child.
Yeah.
And from there, it was fairly easy.
That's awesome. And with guys like that, you hear always on set that they improvise a lot. Was there a lot of improvisation in Last Supper?
Yes, definitely, yeah. And I always said, whatever is written on the paper, don't worry too much about it. It's just a guideline. I want you to become that person and say or behave in whatever way you would if you were that person.
That's awesome. And there's also one other person, a heavyweight, if you will. I really look up to Penny Marshall, and it says here that she has a cameo in the film. How did that come about, Parham?
We were looking for a known film director who sort of hits upon these guys on YouTube and wants to make a movie with them at Paramount.
That's awesome.
So that's how we thought of Penny Marshall. She is a good friend of Eddie's, and he called and introduced, and it's a very interesting experience. We went to shoot at her house, and she was like, okay, as soon as we are done, she said, are you guys done? Done. Okay, get out.
What kind of house does Penny Marshall live in? Is it a mansion?
Oh, it's a mansion overlooking, you know, the lowly city of Los Angeles.
Wow.
Wow, that had to be quite the experience. Were you nervous meeting Penny Marshall? I mean, you have to look up to her as a fellow director, you know?
Yeah, no, she's a huge name in movie business, but at the same time, it's a job. You know, I had to get her. And she was playing herself, so it wasn't that hard. She was on the bed where she always sleeps and, you know, writes her movies, so we shot her on the same bed.
Yeah, so she was. It wasn't hard for her to be natural in that setting, obviously.
Yeah.
That's cool, though.
If people aren't intrigued enough by Last Supper, you have the benefit of seeing Penny Marshall's bed and where she sleeps, Matt.
Yeah, there you go. And that's huge.
Yeah.
That's huge for all us cinema lovers, because we sort of worship her. She has done some incredible work.
Absolutely.
So, Parham, I wanted to ask you about, you know, you guys had a really great showing out at the San Francisco Global Movie Fest. I wanted to know if you could tell us a little bit about how that experience was for you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you go to these film festivals, you expect, you know, 25 to 30 people in almost an empty hall, and, you know, they clap at the end of the movie and you're done. Here, this was California Theater in San Jose, a historic building, and with a packed crowd of more than 1,000 people.
Wow.
So that's when you're biting your nails, you know, you don't know what to expect, even though you've given it your best. So it was an amazing experience, because for a filmmaker these days, the toughest thing is to find an audience. And when you have an audience of 1,000-plus people applauding, laughing at these jokes, which you expect them to laugh at, crying when you expect them to cry, I mean, that's the biggest high any filmmaker can ever imagine.
I would have to agree with you. I mean, just knowing that, you're sitting there in the room, as you were saying, is your stomach's probably in knots, because you're hoping that they laugh when you thought they were going to laugh. And I'm sure there's times in the movie they may have laughed at something that you didn't think was as funny.
Exactly.
Or, right?
Exactly. And that's even a massive kick.
Yeah. I know there's like a lot of times you hear like movie stars or directors, they hate to watch a movie in front of a live audience because they just get so nervous. They'd rather not be in the theater. Did you sit out with the crowd, or were you off to the side?
No, I sat with the crowd, and it's first 15, 20 minutes. You know whether you've made garbage or it's a movie that people can connect with. So very quickly I realized, okay, this one's not garbage. It's going to work.
That's awesome.
That's great, man.
So at that point when you entered the film festival, did you already have distribution, or did the win at the San Francisco Global Movie Fest help that?
The win helped a lot, the reaction of the audience. The movie's picking a lot of traction. You know, there are a lot of requests from mainstream American media regarding covering this film. So, yes, it did help, you know, once you win something.
And so we understand this is coming out actually right around Thanksgiving?
That's right.
And so will that be like a limited release movie, but it'll be out everywhere in the country, at least all the main cities?
That's right. Yes, it'll be in theaters in all the major markets.
That's awesome.
That's great, man. I can't wait to go see it myself.
I appreciate that.
So how many films have you made prior to Last Supper?
I've made about 3 features and about 5 shorts.
And what's coming up next for you?
I'm making a film called The Last American Taboo, which is about a desperately inadequate guy who exchanges his soul with Satan for male enhancement.
Hey, wait, is this about Rye the Movie Guy?
Oh, come on, man. Boy, oh, boy. Low blow, guy. Low blow.
That's awesome, man. It sounds like you've got a knack for the comedies, man. This one, I'm assuming, is a comedy, right?
See, I'm a dentist by profession, and I see a lot of pain on a daily basis. I'm a full-time dentist. As I'm talking to you, I'm in my dental clinic, and there's a patient waiting for me to pull out a tooth. So the whole point is that it's a very painful profession, and I can't think of anything other than comedy, you know, to bring a smile on the faces of my audience.
Wow. I mean, knowing this, you actually just made me think of the dentist scene from Little...
Yeah, that's the exact same thing that popped into my head. Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah, Little Shop of Horrors. Boy.
Steve Martin, yeah. It's a great scene.
I've always wanted to remake that, since it's in public domain, and I have a script ready, but I'm not there yet to sort of say, okay, I can do it.
Yeah. I mean, you ever mess with some of your patients and have that plane while they're waiting to see you?
They bring it up a lot. In fact, every single time I'm working on them. But, you know, I've been telling my stories to my patients for a while now. I've been doing dentistry here in Stockton, California for 12 years. So most of my patients, you know, they expect to hear a story every time they come. And I sort of throw out my ideas at them. And if it's a yay, okay, maybe, you know, develop it into a script. If it's a nay, then you know that, you know, don't worry about it.
Wow. Dentist turned filmmaker.
I was thinking the same thing.
And here he's got a hit on his hand with Last Supper. Congratulations again on the movie.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Ryan.
Thanks a lot to Parham Gill. He's going to be back joining us. He's going to judge a cinema war. He's also going to take Matt on in trivia. So don't worry, we're going to hear more from Parham Gill. But it does bring us to a segment called Eye for an Eye, Interested or Ignore. And Eye for an Eye is sponsored by
OnScribe.
Tell me more.
Do you work hard to create online content, Ryan?
Damn right I do.
That's right. Whether it's writing, photography, music, video, a blog, a comic, or a video game, if you create original content, then you deserve to get paid for your efforts. OnScribe makes it super easy to add subscription buttons to your content using known and trusted payment services like PayPal and Google Wallet. Users can subscribe to your content without needing an OnScribe account, and you get paid immediately. OnScribe charges no additional fees or commissions on your subscriptions, and it's free to get started. What do you have to lose, Ryan?
Nothing.
That's right. Visit OnScribe at onscri.be today and get the credit you deserve.
I for an eye this week met the Equalizer. A man believes he has put his mysterious past behind him and has dedicated himself to beginning a new, quiet life. But when he meets a young girl under the control of ultra-violent Russian gangsters, he can't stand idly by. He has to help her, Matt. The film stars Denzel Washington and is directed by Antonio Fuqua, who directed Denzel in Training Day, his Oscar-winning performance. Matt, interested or ignore on The Equalizer?
This sounds like a piece of junk, man. Although the Training Day thing does bring it up a notch. And I can't go middle of the road, huh? Ignore.
Boy, I'm shocked it took you so long to ignore this movie.
Well, Training Day was great.
Right,
I
love it.
It's amazing.
I agree. But are they going to catch lightning in a bottle twice?
Probably not.
And can you imagine us talking about The Equalizer 10 years from now?
Well, but I mean, Denzel's been making...
Oh, when Denzel was in The Equalizer!
I know, it's a crappy title, but that aside, I mean, Denzel's been making great choices. Flight was amazing.
It was.
You know?
That's why I was sort of shocked by this one. I Twittered out, why is Denzel taking the Liam Neeson career path suddenly?
Well, and then he did do that crappy one with, Mark Wahlberg?
Yeah, Two Guns.
Two Guns, yeah.
Boo-hoo.
Yeah.
I'm also ignoring The Equalizer. No love here on Cinema Jaw for The Equalizer, but what's funny about it is the inspiration for the trivia that you're going to be taking Paramount later on in the show. Crappy movie title, movie trivia. And
I was just thinking that was a really crappy title.
I'm just going to give you the three actors you're going to have to choose from.
Okay.
I didn't to Parham earlier, so you got a little bit of an advantage here, Matt.
Yeah.
The three actors who have made a lot of generic movie titles.
Mm-hmm.
Denzel Washington.
Right.
Liam Neeson.
Okay.
And Jean-Claude Van Damme.
I'm going to clobber this guy.
You say it now, but we'll see how that plays out.
I'm going to clobber
him. Hey, I'll bet you $5 that Parham wins.
You're on.
All right.
Five.
You heard it here, Jawheads.
Yep.
Matt, you really think you probably know these actors. So
If there's anything I know, it's crappy movies.
All right. We'll see how you do. Can't wait to hear how that finishes out. Whew. Talking about new movies, Matt, I got out in the theater and I caught This Is Where I Leave You.
3 months ago, I had a great job and a nice apartment and I was in love with my wife.
When?
No.
How long?
A year.
This is the first time. On our sides.
Hello.
I imagine by now you are well into the excessive facial hair phase of your depression.
It's not a good time, Wendy.
Dad's dead.
What?
Hi, sis.
Mommy.
What's different about her?
The boobs. She had a little touch-up.
Your father had one final request, and we are going to honor it.
He just wanted his kids under one roof. So for the next 7 days, you are all grounded.
Jason Bateman plays Judd Altman, a guy who has the perfect life going, Matt. That all changes when he walks in on his wife cheating on him with his boss. A few weeks later, he finds out his dad has passed away and that his family will be sitting Shiva, a Jewish tradition of mourning the dead for 7 days. The Altmans are a dysfunctional bunch, which is where all the dark humor lies in the film. His sister is played by Tina Fey, and his two brothers by Adam Driver from Girls and Corey Stoll from House of Cards. They each have their own issues going that they would rather not talk about with the family. But when you are together for 7 days straight, everything eventually comes out into the open. As perfectly cast as I thought Jason Bateman was, the opposite can be said for Jane Fonda, who plays the grieving mother. I found her very, very distracting in the film. I would have much rather it have been a lesser-known actress, much like June Squibb in last year's Nebraska. That said, the outrageous banter between the siblings saves the film, especially between Jason Bateman and Tina Fey. Those two had great chemistry on screen, for sure. Having read the book, I was sad to see them water down a couple of the storylines that added so much more depth to the family dynamic. You can say they made it a little bit less quote-unquote complicated, which was sad because complicated is a key word used throughout the film. In the end, I enjoyed the humor and was glad they stayed true to the book and did not wrap it up in a bow. But I do think they left a lot on the table. Ride the Movie Guy's grade, 2.5 Jaws for This Is Where I Leave You.
I haven't read the book. Is it good?
The book is excellent. It's 4 Jaws. I loved it. And you know,
I like Jason Bateman. I really liked his spelling bee thing.
Right, bad words.
Yeah.
Sure. And you know, when I read the book and then I went online to see if they were making a movie and I found out that they were and that Jason Bateman was cast.
Yeah, you were excited.
Oh, was I excited. Sure. I thought, wow, they nailed it. Jason Bateman's perfect for this role because a lot like we saw it with Jim Carrey when he...
I mean, he's no Justine Bateman.
Right. We saw it with Jim Carrey when he took the turn into sort of a more dramatic role. And you've seen it obviously lately with Ben Stiller. He'll do, you know, like Greenberg. Yeah. This is that perfect role for Jason Bateman where there's still comedy involved and he can still be very sarcastic Bateman, but at the same time, there's some heavy drama involved.
Yeah.
And so it gives him that good balance.
They missed the mark though, huh?
But they missed the mark for sure. And some of the things were rushed. And I tell you, Jane Fonda, I mean, she has hilarious lines throughout because the character's so well written.
Sure.
But she's so distracting. I think they would have done much better with a lesser known actress.
Huh. You know, I got to admit to you that even though you're kind of giving it a bad review, you've made me more excited about it than I was before.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll check it out. A couple other highlights I did want to mention. Adam Driver, who I mentioned in the film, he's definitely going to be a star.
Is he related to Minnie?
No, but he plays in the movie, he plays the careless younger, the youngest brother, the youngest sibling in the family, and he's actually going to be in Star Wars Episode 7 as well.
Oh, then I'm all about him.
Yeah, he's going to be, definitely. You can see it on screen when I was watching him. I was like, oh, this guy's going to be a star. You can just tell.
Nice.
Again, as I was mentioning on Bateman, serious yet had room for comedy. One of his best, I would say, overall. But it did also have a few very bad acting moments. One with Tina Fey in the very opening movie. She has to tell Jason Bateman via a phone that their dad had passed away. This happens within 2 minutes of the opening of the movie. And it's just poor acting. You know, it's just like...
From who? Bateman?
No, from Tina Fey.
From Tina Fey?
Yeah, it's like, ah, oh, that looks terrible. It's just like, she's fake crying. Well, I don't know. It just does not come through as authentic.
Tina Fey has to cry in this movie?
Yeah, a little bit.
That's a that's got to be a bit of a challenge for
her. It is.
Yeah.
It is.
That sucks.
But the audience that I was with, everybody had a good laugh with it. So, check it out, Jawheads. I'm not saying it's the absolute worst. 2.5 Jaws.
Yeah, maybe something a little different out there right now.
For sure. I know... it's September, and a lot of times that sort of starts the Oscar bait a little bit. You know what I mean? I think that's what they had in mind opening this, but I don't think you'll hear anything about it come Oscar season.
No buzz.
Nope. Okay. But, Jawheads, I do recommend reading the book, This Is Where I Leave You. I loved it. I thought it was stellar.
Cool.
It is not much of a meta movie, but that is our topic because we had on our guest, Parham Gill, who directed the film Last Supper, which is in a way a meta film because these guys are making a movie and it's on YouTube and it's a movie of a movie and that kind of good stuff.
Sure.
And this was really your idea. Give us again the description of meta.
Well, I think it's a movie that's about making movies, or not necessarily. It's a movie that's self-referential in some way. Maybe they break the fourth wall, etc. It gets in on itself. That's how I'm saying it.
You're getting a start at this week, man.
All right. At number 5, a movie we watched just recently. We spoke to the director, in fact. I'm just getting this out of the way. The Institute. It's a documentary, about a very strange experience of a game that was played, an alternate reality game that was played in San Francisco in 2005 or 2008. But the movie itself takes you on a trip that's a bit of a game and a puzzle to solve. And it sort of blurs the lines along the same lines as Exit Through the Gift Shop of what parts of this is actually the documentary and what part of it is actually the game that you're still playing. So I really enjoyed it. A great meta film.
It is a meta film. I didn't really think about it either as being a meta film, but as you mentioned it here on the 5, yeah, it fits into that category for sure.
For sure. I just want to get it out of the way.
And it was funny, too, after we had that as our book club, and we're announcing our next selection next week. So,
Ooh. Yeah,
this is pretty exciting.
Hey.
When we had it, I know Jawheads, that might not have participated in the actual...
Movie club,
but they watched it afterwards. They wrote us, and they're like, what the hell did I just watch?
Yeah, it's polarizing, because some people, like Mark Dusick, recommended it to us way back, really love it, and some people were like, this is a piece of crap.
Right.
Like
I was middle of the road with it. I didn't buy it as much as you did. At number 5, I have a film that came out in 2005 and stars your boy, Tony Stark. I'm speaking of Robert Downey Jr., and also Val Kilmer in one of his best roles. I'm speaking of the movie Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Have you seen this one by chance?
I've not.
Oh, this is such... You would love this movie. Kilmer plays a gay detective that Robert Downey Jr. is partnered with to learn how to play a detective on TV. And it is obviously sort of parodying and sort of in that meta way. They're actually get involved with a crime. They see a kidnapping and they try to, you know, get involved, save the girl, and they actually shoot the girl and mistake. But all this other stuff happens. It's like a dark comedy. But they're supposed to be practicing, you know, how to become a detective. And yeah, this whole case is going on about it. And Downey has hilarious narration throughout the movie. And actually, the very beginning of the film is actually very meta as well. Downey actually is, I think he's coming from like a hotel, if I had to say. It's been a few years since I've seen it. And he sees his friend get shot in real life. He's not an actor at all. He sees his friend get shot. He's running from the scene, and he actually stumbles into auditions going on to play a detective. And he is just distraught and starts crying. And people think that he's acting, you know, that this is all an act. And they're like, oh, he's such a great method actor. And this is how he gets the role to become the detective. It's a very funny film, a very creative movie. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, Jawheads. I'm sure most have seen it, but if you haven't, it's sort of become a cult favorite. Check it out. That's my number five.
All right, so at number four, I'm just going to read some of the cast to you here. Milton Berle, Mel Brooks, Dom DeLuise, Elliot Gould, Bob Hope, Madeline Kahn, Carol Kane, Steve Martin, Richard Pryor. I could go on and on. Orson Welles, The Muppet Movie. The Muppet.
I mean, I haven't seen this since I was a kid.
Come on now. You got to see it again. I believe it was 1979 that this film came out.
Are you positive on that?
I'm positive on
that.
Okay. 1979. We could throw it in the Jawbox.
Throw it in the Jawbox.
I'm not 100%, okay, but I'm pretty darn sure. So here is a movie about Kermit and the gang getting together for the first time, and they are making a movie while they're making the movie. They're making a movie about making the movie about making the movie. So it just unfolds in all these layers, and of course, it's the Muppet Show, so it ends up on stage, and you know, wackiness ensues. It's an absolute classic of not only childhood. I really think that Jim Henson was a genius, and the stuff that he put on screen, while it would be improved upon later by himself, has not been improved upon by anybody else.
I would like to go back and see it and see how it holds up, because I haven't seen it, like I said, since I was a kid.
It's a little rough around the edges, but the kernel of the idea is there. And the most recent, not the most recent, the Muppet film with a couple years ago, the one from...
With Jason Segel?
Thank you. I think really fulfilled that dream, or at least carried it into the modern,
sure,
you know, age.
That was an awesome one. Can't
really
say as
was
much for the latest Muppet movie.
No, it was okay at best. Decent at best, as you like to say.
Yeah, dab. Decent at best. All right, number four I have. I actually had a tie because I wanted to mention two movies, but I have a feeling one of them might
be
on your list.
That's very meta of you.
Yeah, there you go. But I am actually going to stick with my original one, which came out in 1996, sort of reinvented the horror genre on a popular scale anyways. Oh. I'm speaking of Wes Craven's Scream.
Interesting. One of my honorables.
All right.
Yeah.
And you know what? I remember I'm still not, and I wasn't at the time, very much into horror films. And I remember everybody making a big deal about Scream, and you had to go see it. It was, again, like it seemed we had a drought there of like a popular horror franchise come out that was new, you know?
Right. After the 80s slasher thing ended, it was kind of like, what is there now?
Right. It's sort of, there was a lull there that seemed for a long time anyways, to me.
There was a couple of blips in there, like Blair Witch Project, but nothing that really caught on.
Right. And all of a sudden, here comes Scream, and you watch it, and they're basically talking about the horror film.
The tropes of the genre,
yeah,
right? How do you survive the horror movie? Don't have sex. Don't
right.
smoke pot. That's...
Don't go outside by yourself.
Right.
Yeah. And yeah, one of my favorite parts is when he says, don't say, I'll be right back.
Right.
I'll be right back. I loved it. I ate it up with a spoon. I was so into it. And I don't own, I have a pretty good size DVD collection. Horror films probably make up less than 2%, but Scream, damn it, is on my shelf. I love that movie.
You know, the funny thing is Drew Barrymore's role in this movie is literally like 4 minutes long.
And so memorable.
So, I mean, she capitalized on that. Like, when you think of Scream, the first image that pops into your mind is that image of her cooking the Jiffy Pop and answering the phone.
No doubt.
And it's indelible.
Yeah, and an awesome death also. I mean, comes from behind.
Yeah.
Awesome.
She gets it good.
What do you got sitting at three, Matt?
At number three, I have another horror movie. A very recent one.
This is what was tied with it.
Really? Cabin in the Woods.
Yep.
I thought it was great. This movie is so weird, but I love the fact that it was so self-aware that it was a horror movie. You know, these kids are trapped in the stereotypical cabin in the woods, and everything they go through to get to this cabin in the woods is being controlled by these behind-the-scenes guys who are the sort of directors of this world.
Yeah, and one of them is played by Richard Jenkins, who I love. He's a great character actor.
I love him, too. It's definitely, you know, there's some the ulterior motives, which get to be a little paranormal, but before you get to that part, just thinking of it as a movie within the movie, it's kind of like a reality TV show, and it was great. So out of the box, man.
I love that one as well, too. And that was one where I remember when it came out, I was obviously, I'm not going to see this movie. Then everybody tells me, hey, it's got good buzz. And it came out on video. I had rented it. And it was like, wow, this is really good. It's out there. It was just a fun movie, a fun horror film.
Yeah. And I'll watch it again because it's great. It's one of the greatest endings of a horror movie.
Oh, for sure.
It's the only ending, really.
Nice pick there.
Thanks.
Like I say, I had that tied with Scream. I didn't know which way I was going to go, but
I dig your choice because now we got to talk about both of them.
Exactly. At number three, I have a film that came out in 2006, stars Will Ferrell, Emma Thompson, Dustin Hoffman. I saw it open up the Chicago International Film Festival with Will Ferrell and Dustin Hoffman on hand. Probably one of my most memorable moments at the festival. I am speaking of Stranger Than Fiction.
That is a great pick, dude. I didn't consider this one.
And obviously, the movie opens with Will Ferrell brushing his teeth, and all of a sudden he hears this narration in his head. Somebody's narrating his life. As he's doing what he's doing, he hears Emma Thompson's voice narrating.
And he picked up the toothbrush and brushed his teeth, and then wondered,
And of course, what's hilarious, too, and I had forgot, I got to go back and watch this movie, because I loved it. I've seen it maybe twice.
I got to go back and watch it, too.
He actually seeks out Dustin Hoffman.
He's like a psychologist or psychiatrist.
Yeah, and he actually starts talking to him about trying to figure out what author it is who's writing this book about his life. And so they start talking about the different characteristics of, you know, what's going on in his life.
Right, she's British.
Yeah, and they start to narrow it down. And of course, this becomes a very meta in the fact that he actually goes to meet the narrator who's writing this book about his life. It's awesome. I mean, it's such a great idea, and Will Ferrell, in one of his more serious roles, it's not so serious, it's a perfect role for him, where it's not quite the screwball comedy that we're used to laughing at Will Ferrell,
but
it was...
You know what you could say is it's more intelligent than most of his roles.
Right.
You know, because he's like in Talladega Nights, and it's just like stupid, like base humor. But this one actually, like, there's some thought behind it.
Sure. And yeah, like I said, I saw this thing open in Chicago International, and they were giving, like, an award to Dustin Hoffman, gave just an awesome, like, 25-minute speech about the power of film and art. It was very moving. It was actually
an awesome
experience. So,
dude,
Stranger Than Fiction, my number three. What do you got sitting at two?
Well, at number two, I have a film that is near and dear to my heart, one of my favorites of all times. And we all love Mel Brooks, but if you told me that I had to pick just one to watch over and over again, I would pick every time Spaceballs. And the reason this movie is meta...
I was going to say, is this meta? Because he has obviously more... meta films, if you will.
It is and it isn't. Obviously, most of his films are self-referential in the fact that they're parodies. But this one has one of the best quintessential meta scenes in it, which is, of course, when they rent the movie of Spaceballs. You can rent movies now before they're finished making the movie.
Awesome.
And they pop it into the Mr. Movie player. And it's like, what part of the movie is this? This is now. Everything you're seeing now is happening now. What happened to then? We passed it. When? Just now. When will then be now? Soon. I could watch that scene, seriously, like they're looking back and forth at the camera. I could watch it again and again. And that had, honestly, I don't think it's ever been done before in a movie. So, I mean, Mel Brooks, obviously a comedy genius, and that was such an original thought that I think carries this into the meta territory very perfectly, and that's why I have it at number two.
That's good. I thought when you said Mel Brooks, I thought you were going to go Blazing Saddles,
you
which
could.
I think is his most meta out of all of his movies.
Right, because it's very self-referential as a Western,
right.
Very aware of itself and going through the tropes of the genre.
And then, of course, at the end, they obviously find out that they're on like a studio lot. You know?
Right.
Good stuff. All right. At my number two, Matt, I ask you a question. Do I like Woody Allen?
No, you hate him.
Of course, I love him. And does Woody Allen have a meta movie in his filmography?
Yes, very many, actually.
In 1997, his most meta film that he's ever made came out. I am speaking of Deconstructing Harry.
Yeah. I thought about putting this on my list, but I'm like, I better not.
Yeah, because you knew I would probably have it.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, and Woody Allen here plays, already it's hilarious because he has writer block. He plays a character who is a writer. His name is Harry Block, which is already funny. He's a writer, and throughout the movie, he has flashbacks and even encounters his own fictional characters that he's written
right.
about.
Robin Williams is
yes.
one of them, yeah.
Which is... I mean, again, you're talking Mel Brooks, comic genius, Woody Allen, comic genius. I mean,
yes.
These guys come up with ideas. It's like, wow. I mean, where the hell did they come up with this stuff, you know?
His character is out of focus.
This is my favorite part. So
yeah.
he's talking about how he's losing focus, and you literally see Woody Allen's character blurred on screen, and he's like looking at himself, and he knows that he's out of focus. Look at me. My body's out of focus. Very meta.
Yeah.
I love it. And of course, it ends with...
Billy Crystal's character, too, is Satan. He's
yeah.
Like, do you smell brimstone?
He meets Billy Crystal as Satan. It's great. And I actually do not own it. I own probably 25, 30 Woody Allen's, and I don't own Deconstructing Harry.
I
so
think
you know
it's
what
one
to
of
get
my
me
favorite.
For Christmas.
All right.
There
right.
you go.
You mean Hanukkah?
Woo! Very meta, man.
Zing.
Wow. We are into our number ones. We have not crossed over yet.
All right. So, and number one, and this is where we might cross over, because when you talk about meta, I think there's one person, one director, let's call him an auteur, who is probably the master of this, and that's Charlie Kaufman. And if I was forced to pick just one, because any one of his movies would be, I would pick Adaptation. Your number one?
My number one as well.
Yeah.
But I agree you could pick any one of his.
You could.
But I think most meta is his most meta film is Adaptation.
They really all are.
They
Schenectady,
all are,
New York.
For sure.
Which is self-referential within self, you know, reference within self-reference. And then, of course, Being John Malkovich, where they literally crawl into the head of another character. But Adaptation is so weird because I genuinely think they hired Charlie Kaufman to adapt the book The Orchid Thief,
right?
And this is what he turned in, and somehow they were like, okay, we're gonna make this.
Yeah. And the author of The Orchid Thief, it's Susan, I forget her name, throw it in the jaw box, who wrote The Orchid Thief, alas. She's played by Meryl Streep in the movie,
right?
And what's funny is, okay, he's gonna make an adaptation of this book, but he ends up writing himself, his fictional brother, into the movie, which is also played by Nicolas Cage. And the author, this Susan, whatever her name is, played by Meryl Streep, they all come into the into the story of the
right.
movie, and you're more or less seeing the movie take place that he's writing, which is just unreal. What an idea.
It has nothing to do with the book.
No, exactly.
Or very little to do with the book.
Right. I mean, Chris Cooper, who won the Academy Award for Supporting Actor in the movie, and you remember him most probably as the next-door neighbor in American Beauty.
Yeah.
He was excellent in there. He really starts the movie about him going to get the orchids and, you know, what a difficult plant it is and to find and such, and that he can't take them. That's why he has, like, Native Americans with him, because they can technically take the orchids and it's not against the law. That part of it, I guess, is about the book and how they actually field the orchids. And then it more or less just goes off
the rails.
Off the rails and becomes very meta throughout the entire
but
movie.
Somehow still functions and works really great.
Oh, for sure. And as you had mentioned, I would say probably Charlie Kaufman is the pinnacle of meta. I mean, everything the guy writes is meta. So, I mean,
the thing is, the reason why I think this one is the best is because the other ones, Malkovich and Schenectady, New York, were intentionally meta. I genuinely think that when Kaufman got this assignment, if you will, he didn't know what to do.
Right.
And he just wound up making it meta by accident. I think that's just his genre, man.
And, you know, I recently rewatched it, and there is a funny scene where he's meeting, I believe it's Kate Blanchett in the movie, for like a lunch meeting, you know, and he's so nervous. But he's talking about this in the movie, how nervous he is. And I'm sure this is Charlie Kaufman. This is exactly how he is. You know, he's like, my forehead's sweating. I know she's looking at my forehead sweats. and he's patting it down. She's going to be sitting down any minute, and she's going to comment about how sweaty I am. And I'm like, wow, this is probably how he just decided, like, I'm just going to write exactly what's happening.
Yeah. That's freaking genius.
Awesome, man. Awesome.
Yeah.
Any honorables? Those are my five. What do you got?
I got a couple honorables, actually. Another horror movie is Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon, which examines very closely all the Friday the 13th genre tropes. And my last honorable is also a horror movie, if you will, Zombieland.
It is meta, I guess.
Yeah, because, again, it's very aware of its own genre. You know, it knows that it's a zombie movie, and it's the whole double tap thing and the rules flashing across the screen.
I love that.
Yeah, and then one that I came across very often in the research, I had never considered it a meta movie before, Fight Club.
Sell me on it.
I mean, he's editing movies within the movie. He's putting like little pictures in.
Yeah, and a little penis in there.
Right, and the whole fact that the Tyler Durden character isn't real, it's, I don't know. I consider it meta, but that's why it's an honorable and not on my list.
Sure. Nice. Yep. Jawheads, if we missed your favorite meta movie and you have Twitter pulled up, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw. We'll retweet it and get the discussion going.
What you should do is shoot us a tweet about shooting us a tweet about making a list about meta movies.
Whoa.
Yeah.
My mind is blown.
Gone.
Matt, before we take a break, we threw a couple of things into the Jaw box.
Yes.
And we're going to open it up before the break this time because Elias said that would be very meta. If we open it up before the break and not after the break, I don't know if that is meta. Matt, is it?
Probably not. Let's ask Elias.
All right, let's open up that jaw box.
What's your pleasure, Mr. Cotton?
The box.
We got a box! Now, what's in the box?
I can help you out there. This is very meta because I'm looking up the answers right now. What was the first question again? Refresh me real quick.
There we go.
The year the Muppet movie came out.
Which one was it?
The Muppet movie.
Oh, the Muppet movie. Okay.
This is? Yes. This is awesome.
It's not a movie about the Muppets. It's the Muppet movie.
Let's see if the Jawheads could beat me before I get the answer. It's 1979.
I had
1979.
It right.
And then what was the name of the author? Look it up as we speak.
I already had that. All right. That is Susan Orlean.
Oh, Susan Orlean. I knew it was Susan that stuck out in my
yes.
mind.
Yeah.
What do you think of our meta list, Elias?
It was good. I liked it. Very, very good, guys. That's all I have to say. I'm really like frazzled because you jumped the gun with the jawbox here.
What were you doing in there, Elias?
You,
come on.
You know, but the jawheads don't want to know. I'll tell you that.
See how meta he can get?
Yeah, he's still fighting off that Ebola infection from Tangier.
I thought that was what stays in the jaw box, you know, whatever.
What happens in the jaw box stays in the jaw box, especially you. Get back in there.
Yeah, but not on the meta episode.
All right,
get back in that jaw box.
Bye. I'm going to build a box around the box.
I like it.
Yeah.
This is good stuff.
Yeah,
man.
See how this, we can keep going all night.
I love it. What we're going to do, Jawheads, is take a break. When we come back, Parham Gill is going to be joining us to take Matt on in generic movie title trivia. He's also going to judge me and Matt on a cinema war looking at, is Kevin Smith still relevant or has he sort of fallen off the map? Let's be honest here. We'll be right back on CinemaJaw.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Hi, I'm Matt Kay with a CinemaJaw movie fact. In the movie Spaceballs, the Millennium Falcon from Star Wars can be seen making a cameo appearance in the movie. Look closely at the exterior shot of the space diner and you can spot it parked there among the other space vehicles. And that is your CinemaJaw movie fact.
To get ourselves a treat.
And we are back on CinemaJaw, and joining us again, Matt, is Parham Gill, the director of Last Supper, a film that just went on to win the San Francisco Global Movie Fest. Parham, again, for the jawheads listening to this that want to check out the film, when is it coming out in theaters?
Thanksgiving.
So look it up, Last Supper, and I'm sure it probably has a Facebook page and all that good stuff online.
Yes, we do. Last Supper movie.
Awesome. So look it up, Jawheads, Last Supper movie. It's all over online, and it's hilarious, and you guys will want to check it out for sure. Matt, it brings us to a segment called
Cinema War.
And Cinema War works like this, Jawheads. This is where me and Matt battle on a topic each week, and our guest this week, director Parham Gill, gets to play judge and jury and tell the Jawheads who he thinks won this Cinema War. And it's important because we're battling for 20 seconds of precious jaw time to rant and rave on whatever we want. Kevin Smith has a new film coming out, Tusk. Most people haven't even heard of it. Heck, Elias, tell the Jawheads at home what today's Cinema War topic is.
Today's Cinema War topic, has Kevin Smith fallen off the map? Rye, you'll be fighting, yes, off the map. Matt, you'll be fighting, no, he is still relevant. Let the Cinema War begin.
Matt, Kevin Smith's movies started as small indies and then worked up to a spectacle. They would open at number one at the box office, such as Clerks 2 did. Now, he is happy to even have them open in theaters at all. Heck, he's one step away from straight to video.
Ryan, if Kevin Smith's career were to end after Tusk, the world would be denied yoga hosers and moose jaws. But joking aside, Kevin Smith is always good for two things, laughs and creativity. The guy never stays within the box. He builds a new box, and he breaks out of that one.
Puh. Matt, there is more talking in a conversation with Silent Bob than there is about the latest Kevin Smith release, Tusk. He lost the buzz that made him such an indie star.
Fallen off the map? I don't think so. Kevin Smith has led the charge into digital distribution with Red State, and frankly, he has one of the top 10 podcasts to boot. How is that falling off the map? Just go to any Comic-Con and say his name and watch fanboy panties drop. You don't have to like the guy, but you can't call him irrelevant.
Yeah, but Matt, evidence that Kevin Smith has fallen off the map comes from you, Matt Kay. When I suggested this topic for Cinema War, you asked, why do something about Kevin Smith? I had to inform you that he has a new movie opening up.
I'm gonna take the opposite side of that argument, because here's a perfect case in point. If the guy has fallen off the map, then why are we talking about him? He's got a new trilogy opening up, and I know that his fans, which are many, listening to his podcast, are excited.
All right, last point here. A new Kevin Smith movie used to be a must-see for most moviegoers. Now you have to remind them that he has a new movie coming out. He's fallen from greatness. He is a has-been that would be brought up by Dante and Randall in one of their convenience store conversations as a guy who lost his berserker.
All right, Rye, step down off your high horse and pop into a convenience store once in a while, because there you will find us, the real people who love movies and love Kevin Smith because he loves movies too. The guy is the perfect everyman director, and he's a great storyteller who's only gotten better with age, and I'm stoked to see his new films.
Wow. Button heads on Cinema War. Nothing new here. We throw it over to our guest, Parham Gill. What'd you think of this Cinema War?
Well, I sort of agree with both of you, but here's the point. An independent filmmaker who has scaled such heights as Kevin Smith can never be ignored. He may have fallen off the grid in terms of the commercial aspect of his movies, but at the same time, whatever he does is still relevant. I think the man has amazing body of work, and I think he's going to jump right back anytime. And as far as Tusk is concerned, that is another case in point where he's still experimenting. He's not scared to take chances, and I sort of agree with Matt that
he's
still very much relevant.
Wow. Sounds like a win for me. All right. All right, so that earns me 20 seconds, and I'm going to use it to say I'm inspired by Parham Gill and guys who aren't afraid to follow their dreams. Maybe you have a career in dentistry, or maybe it's something else like construction, but you have these fantastic ideas for stories. Tell your stories. Don't be afraid. You can ask for great actors, and you can ask for great crew members, and you can get things done. You can paint the pictures, make movies, is what I'm saying.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Yeah. For once, I'm actually glad Matt won. Usually, Parham, he really hammed it up here. Usually, his rants are terrible.
That's I got a cop to that one. It's completely true.
Oh, man. This has been a great job already. It brings us to the last segment of the evening, Matt, and that is trivia.
All right.
There is a new film starring Denzel Washington with the generic title The Equalizer, and I hate these kind of titles.
I'm sure there's already five films called The Equalizer.
And these three actors, Jawheads,
that's what I put in my coffee in the morning.
All right. These three actors have a ton of generic movie titles, and what we're going to do here is I'm going to read the movie title, and you tell me which one of these three actors starred in the movie. Either Liam Neeson, Denzel Washington, or Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Well done.
All right. Now, it works like this. Parham, you're our guest. You get to choose if you want to go first or let Matt go first. There are steals, in case the person doesn't know. And if you get hung up on our question, our engineer, Elias Rodriguez, the best in the biz, has clues to all the questions. You get one trip to the ER.
Okay, great. Let's go for it.
All right. You want to go first?
Sure.
All right. Question number one, and I'm going to read these movie titles.
And before we start, Parham, I wish you luck. Thank you for the win in the cinema war.
I'm going to read these movie titles in a very generic voiceover voice, if you will. All right, question number one. The movie title is Unknown.
Unknown. Oh, wow. That's a tough one. could be J.C. Van Damme.
Is that final answer, Van Damme?
Okay, I take it back. Liam Neeson.
Oh, wow.
He pulled it out. Wow. 1-0. 1-0, Parham. Question number two over to Matt. Matt.
You spent a lot of time on this one, didn't you?
Yeah, you like this one.
Yeah, I do.
Question number two is over to Matt. Here you are. Ready?
Yeah.
Six Bullets.
Denzel.
Oh, Parham, you got a chance for a steal. You know it's not Denzel, so...
That sounded like J.C. Van Damme. I mean, that's the guy firing bullets all the time.
That's why I went against. I was like, maybe Denzel did something against.
Oh, it's awesome. Right. It definitely was Van Damme. 2-0, Parham. Question number three is over to him. You can blow this thing wide open. Are you ready, Parham?
Yes.
Question number three. The movie title is Gun Shy.
Oh.
These are horrible.
Gun Shy.
That's quite a title. Well, we haven't seen Denzel so far, so let's pick Denzel.
Oh.
Ooh, incorrect.
Now I got a 50-50 shot at
this. Yeah, Matt, you got a chance for a steal here.
All right. Well, the last gun movie was Van Damme, so I'm going to go Liam Neeson. Ooh, nice.
It was Liam Neeson. Movie came out in the year 2000, Gunshy with Liam Neeson. Check it out, Jawheads. All right, it is 2-1. Matt's on the board. Question number four is over to him. Matt, the name of the title is Safe House.
Oh, that's an easy one.
I think it's Liam Neeson. Oh.
No way. This one just came out. You got a chance for a steal, Parham.
Denzel Washington.
Absolutely.
I did not throw that one away.
No, I genuinely didn't know.
All right, it is three to one, Parham. Question five is over to him. Parham, the name of the movie is Wake of Death.
Wake of Death.
Smells like J.C. Van Damme.
He nailed it. Absolutely nailed
wow.
it. Yes, that one came out in 2004, Jawheads. Look for it direct to video. That is now 4-1.
It's already on Netflix.
All right, question number six is over to Matt. Matt, the name of the movie is Out of Time.
You know, I caught something in the inflection of your voice that smacked
Hey,
of...
I'm just doing voiceover work.
All right, I'm going to say... You know what? Wait, we have these trips to the ER, and I like to let Elias shine in his happy moment, so I'll take a ER.
Whoa! Question number six. The movie title is Out of Time. Elias, who started it?
This clue may give you deja vu.
This clue may give you deja vu. That doesn't help me at all. In fact, that probably threw me off more.
It's a good clue for the Jawheads at home. They're probably like, well, it's obvious now.
Deja vu.
Come on,
man. Oh, man.
Parham's taunting you.
I'm just going with my original thought, Liam Neeson.
That is incorrect, Parham. Did you know this one already?
Oh, yeah, Denzel Washington.
How is Deja Vu relevant?
He
don't
made
get
a
it.
Movie entitled Deja Vu.
Did he?
Yes.
That's another crappy title.
It is now 5-1, Parham. This ball game's blown wide open. Two questions left. Parham's already won it, but just clobber him, okay?
Okay.
Question number 7 over to you. The title is Enemies Closer. These are great.
All this smells of J.C. Van Damme. There's a bunch of direct-to-video titles. Just smells like one, so yeah. I'll go with J.C. Van Damme.
Absolutely. 6-1. He knows his Van Damme. You're like a Van Damme expert, Parham. Hey, maybe you can get him to star in your next movie, the one about the trading the soul to the devil to get a little extra manhood.
Oh, yeah.
I doubt he'll do it in run of the thought of it.
I like Van Damme.
All right, last question of the game, Matt. Save some face here because you've already lost.
I already lost.
It's 6-1. It's a slaughter rule. Question 8, the last title is Under Suspicion.
Under Suspicion. Oh, man. Liam Neeson. I think that's what I've been guessing for everything.
Oh,
yeah! My boy indeed comes through.
It was Liam Neeson. Wow, Parham wins this one 6-2. Virtual handshake, guys.
Virtual handshake, Parham.
Virtual handshake.
All right. We always have a jawbreaker, we call it, Parham. In case it came down to a tie, we would have asked you this question to unbreak the tie. Who wins in a 3-man street fight? Denzel Washington, Liam Neeson, or Jean-Claude Van Damme?
It's going to be Denzel Washington. J.C. Van Damme can only fight in movies.
That is incorrect. It's actually Liam Neeson. You missed that one. Oh,
I
man.
Love it.
I like that Parham gets my humor.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. He gets it.
All right. The real jawbreaker was this. Age of, as you call him, J.C. Van Damme. Closest to. You got a guess, Parham?
His age?
Yeah.
45.
Elias, lock him in at 45. Matt, you got a guess?
I think JCV has been around the block a few more times than that. I would say 51.
We'd give that to Matt. He's actually 53.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
He looks good. He can still do the split on two moving trucks, and he's impressive.
You know, on a Volvo ad. That's great. Yeah. I didn't have any special effects at all.
No special effects on that.
Awesome. Boy, oh boy, it brings us to the end of a great jaw. And first and foremost, we got to thank Parham Gill. Thanks for coming on, Parham. You were a great guest.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and again, for the jawheads listening to this at home that want to maybe find out more about the Last Supper film coming out and they want to look it up online, the best place to do so, Parham?
LastSupperMovie.com.
Perfect.
Yeah, that is great. I know you got a patient probably still in the chair. I don't know if that tooth is out already.
Well, I'll head out and find out if I'm going to pull his tooth or he's going to pull mine.
Hey, and if you ever come to Chicago to shoot on location, me and Matt want a cameo in the movie.
Done deal.
Awesome.
Awesome. Thanks again for coming on, Parham. Matt, it's just been unbelievable. Such a great jaw.
For sure.
Yeah, we got to thank our engineer, the best in the biz, Elias Rodriguez.
Thanks, guys.
And also our sponsors.
Yeah.
New 400 and
OnScribe.
OnScribe. I love those guys.
They are the best.
They are. Until next week, check us out on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter.
And keep on jawing about the movies.
That's a wrap.